Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. My name is Garrett Lill. I'm a certified financial planner and former advisor. And I started Advisor Advocates in this podcast to share with other advisors some of the experience that I like to say I accidentally accumulated over the course of my 13-year career, especially around the areas of the industry involving transitions from one firm to the other, advisor recruiting, M&A deals, things of that nature. Interesting thing for advisors that I've experienced in my career is that advisors are often on an island. We don't really know what's out there. We don't know what's going on outside the walls of our firm and outside the confines of our own practices. Especially when I was working in the recruiting industry and talking with advisors, there were just so many advisors who didn't know what they didn't know. So the purpose of this podcast and Advisor Advocates is to help bridge that information gap, to help advisors understand a little bit more about what the landscape looks like out there, what options are available to you, and sort of share some of the insights that I've ran into and hopefully answer some of the most common questions that advisors have. So my quick backstory before we get started on this, I started my career in 2009 with a pretty large firm in an employee advisor role. In 2013, I left there to join an independent broker-dealer, stayed there for a couple of years, started my own RIA in 2015, and then sold my RIA in 2022. After that, I spent just a little bit of time around the recruiting industry, just long enough to understand that that's where souls go to die, and that's where we kind of enter the Advisor Advocates project and share with advisors some of the lessons learned along the way and just some of the information that I've kind of bumped into without really looking for it. So today I want to talk about what I believe may be one of the best kept secrets, maybe at least in terms of it's a pretty well kept secret from advisors, and that is the independent tuck-in business model. I've learned from chatting with advisors that the term independent tuck-in is one that some have heard of, some are familiar with. It's not always completely understood when I say it, but it is out there, and I know some are using that term. But when you talk about an independent tuck-in, there's really, it's sort of a hybrid of two words, right? From the independent side, what that means is that the advisors are independent contractors who own their own books of business. But the tuck-in portion of that phrase comes from the fact that really advisors in that tuck-in model, to the outside world looking in, it appears to be one synergistic team all working together. You're sharing office space, you're sharing common branding, you're all working together in every capacity. It's really only in the fine print of the contract that you are an independent contractor, but you own your own practice outright. You make the best decisions for your clients based on the rules and regulations of the firm, obviously, but ultimately it's your book to do what you think is in the best interest of your clients. But you have this team environment where you are sharing ideas, sharing resources, working together in collaboration with other independent advisors in the same office space. Probably the best analogy or the best phrase that I've heard to describe this, a firm owner in Manhattan, Empire Asset Management, shout out to Greg Zioli if he happens to come across the show, but I heard him refer to his firm one time as a hotel for independent financial advisors. And I thought that was a really good way of describing it because they're going to provide everything that you need to run your business, everything from business cards, website, office space, a team around you of support staff, everything that you need to plug your practice into and run it the way you need to run it. However, because you're independent, you own the practice. So if you decide to leave and go elsewhere, your client book is more portable if things aren't working out and you need to go elsewhere. And also because you're independent, the economics are going to be more friendly for the advisor. In other words, you're just going to make more money, higher revenue payouts, and we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But the independent tuck-in model really sort of represents, I think, the best of both worlds, right? So when you're an employee, everything's provided for you. You don't have a whole lot of decisions to make. You don't have to really run the business that much. It's sort of plug and play in terms of how you run your business, but you're sacrificing a little bit on the economic side. You're typically getting 40, maybe 45% of your revenue as your compensation. On the flip side of that extreme, when you're independent, you control most of the revenue, but you also have to run every aspect of the business. You may be keeping 90, 95% of your revenue, but you're having to run everything top to bottom. It's your business. You're responsible for everything. So the tuck-in kind of lives in this middle ground where you don't have to go out and build everything from the ground up. You can plug into someone else's brand, plug into their practice, use their planning software, work in collaboration and concert with the team around you to share ideas, share resources, work together towards this common goal. But your business is your business, and you earn significantly more take-home pay as a result of being a part of this type of a model. the payouts in the independent tuck-in model are going to be, you know, I'm going to talk in ranges, right? I'm not going to sit here and try to peg any national averages or anything like that. But usually what I see is going to be somewhere between 70 and maybe 85% on the high end in terms of revenue kept by the advisor from their practice. Now, these payouts can come in a few different forms. Some firms will offer an all-inclusive, what you see is what you get, and we're going to pay for everything. Other firms may offer a little bit higher gross payout, but you're going to have some other charges for things like access to technology. You may be paying your own errors and omissions insurance. The laundry list of things you could be paying is pretty long, so it won't go down the entire list. But when you're looking at these examples, you do want to make sure you're asking those questions and make sure you know how the financials are being billed and how they're being presented to you, because you could easily take an advisor with $200,000 in production at an 80% payout. Okay, simple enough math, you're making $160,000. Okay, and you compare that to an advisor at a 75% payout making $150,000. Well, once you go down the list of, okay, $4,000 for errors and omissions insurance, $3,000 for technology, $3,000 for the brokerage fee, $100 per client account, and you start to slice these things up, if the advisor at an 80% payout has $20,000 worth of expenses, they're now at $140,000, which is obviously 70%. They're losing $10,000 to the 75% all-in payout. Now, I'm not trying to steer one way or the other. Neither is necessarily right or wrong. It really comes down to your practice and how many of these other services are you going to be plugging into and which of these fees are going to be applicable to your practice. There's a very good chance that if a lot of those fees don't apply to you, you may be better off going with the higher payout. At the same time, there's a lot of situations where you may be a little bit better served going with an all-inclusive payout that's going to get you to net a better outcome. For the rest of the conversation about compensation and payouts, I'm just going to speak in terms of what I refer to as the true net payout. So in terms of averages and where you should expect to be, I don't really care if it's a high gross with a lot of nickel and dime charges or a all-inclusive that's a little bit lower. I'm really speaking in terms of what is the true net typically to the advisor. If you are a smaller advisor or with a smaller book of business, $150,000 revenue, your payouts in a tuck-in are probably going to be 60 to maybe 65, some situations maybe 70% true net. Once you get to the 250 mark, you should be around that 70% mark or so on average, maybe 75. Certainly when you get to $500,000 in production, you should be looking at average payouts for a tuck-in around that 75-80% range. And if you are an advisor whose practice is pushing $1 million in production, you do have some leverage and negotiating power to be able to get in the 85% range. I wouldn't say it's impossible to get a payout up to the 90% bracket. I would say that's pretty rare. And if you're a firm who offers a 90% payout to independent tuck-ins, give me a call. I'd love to know about you and know who to where to send advisors. But for the most part, I would say that 75-80% is really the sweet spot that I would expect to see in terms of the true net on your 1099 after all expenses have been paid. Now, with the payout and the economics, there are a couple of different ways that this can play itself out, right? So if you're an advisor who does a decent amount of brokerage business and you're aligning with a local firm who's a part of an independent broker-dealer, that firm is going to act as an OSJ, is the term you're probably familiar with hearing there. In those situations, it can be a little bit murkier in terms of what the payouts look like because that broker-dealer may have more of those nickel and dime fees associated. But if you're working with a true independent RIA and you're an RIA only, or with an RIA who may be partnered with an RIA-friendly broker-dealer outside of their practice, in other words, it's unbundled, it's not one independent broker-dealer that they're doing all of their work with, but they are the independent RIA partnered with a broker-dealer for brokerage transactions, that compensation structure and the way that's all going to look is usually going to be a little bit cleaner, at least in terms of having less of those nickel and dime charges to have to ask about. And there's a pretty good chance that it's going to end up having a little bit lower overall expense to the advisor as well. So I would say if you're looking at an independent broker dealer, decent rule of thumb is that on average, probably 5-10% off of that stated gross payouts, what you're actually going to net. Where with an independent RIA that doesn't have any type of brokerage business ties, or if you yourself are not doing a lot of brokerage business, that those nickel and dime charges may be nothing. They could be maybe 3-5%, but they're usually pretty negligible. One of the really great benefits of the tuck-in model from talking to advisors that I find is that So for myself, when I was an independent RIA, I did that for 7 years. That was the majority of my career. I felt very isolated and on an island. Talking to other advisors that have gone that path, there's a need that humans have to be part of a community, to have that work culture, at least in most cases. Certainly in the advisor industry, where we all tend to be a little bit more extroverted, staying in an office by yourself is not usually ideal. In fact, a lot of the advisors who do opt to start their own firms are doing so with the hope of building a team around them so that they're not that one-man advisor island. Because I know during COVID, during the fallout of that, I was talking to some other friends in the industry here and there, but things were going nuts. And I wasn't having a whole lot of conversations. Most of my information was from my brain and CNBC. So a lot of times we do benefit a lot from having other folks in our work environment to bounce ideas off of. And also, just having the camaraderie. Look, it's not all, I know this is a business, and at the end of the day, we care about the bottom line, but there is something to be said for just having that community and folks that you can talk to as well and just interact with and share ideas and grow together and working together. Now, for that reason, I would say the payout is probably one of the important factors, obviously. Most advisors are going to look at the financials as a very high factor, but I will say most advisors, when they're looking at different tuck-in options, they're going to look at the team and the synergy and making sure that they're plugging into a network of like-minded professionals as opposed to just plugging in with the firm who has the best payout. 72% versus 75% doesn't make as big of a difference if you're talking about a stock picker joining a firm that's very strongly evangelical about the efficient market hypothesis. So there are going to be that's going to be a factor in the decision for you, and probably one of the leading factors is, do you like this team? Is this a team that is going to help you grow the overall enterprise value of your practice and earn more money and have a more successful career? That's going to be more important in most situations than 2 or 3 percentage points on your net revenue payout. One of the things I love about the tuck-in model, I'll be very transparent about this, from my position, I like tuck-in models because they are a best of both worlds for advisors who want freedom, but they don't want to run their own practice. And that means just about any advisor that I talk to could potentially consider a tuck-in option. And what I mean by that is, if you are in a wirehouse or a big firm and you're getting a 40% payout, or a local bank and you're at a 40% payout, and you really want to own your own firm, but you're not really sure if you're ready to take that leap of faith just yet and go start your own thing, if you find the right tuck-in, you're going to just about double your income from a 40% payout to 70, 75, maybe even 80% payout. But you're not going to be doubling your responsibility at all. In fact, there are some situations where if you're bogged down with a lot of red tape at your employer, you may actually see an improvement in your work-life balance going to a local tuck-in where you're sharing some of those responsibilities. But even for advisors who do want to have their own name on the sign at some point, they do want to end up having total control and having their own firm, the tuck-in model can still be a really good stepping stone to getting there. And the reason for that is, when you're at that employee relationship where you're taking home 40%, yes, jumping all the way up to 90 sounds great, but there are a lot of unknowns that are pretty big variables to you. Number one, your firm is not going to let those clients go easily. You don't know how many of those clients and those client relationships are going to transition over, how many you're going to be able to retain. And you also don't, even if you've done your homework and you have a pretty good idea of what it's going to cost to run your business, you still don't know until you make that leap what exactly it's going to cost, right? You just don't know what you don't know. And nickel and dime charges come up, unexpected things come up. So there's a huge degree of uncertainty going all the way from the employee side to totally independent, and I'm running my own brand, running my own show, doing everything. But the tuck-in model gives you sort of that middle ground where, number one, you learn a lot more about the inner workings of what's going on behind the firm. You get some experience on having to do your compliance and what different technologies are out there and having some more flexibility and independence. But at the same time, when you make the jump from tuck-in up to the total independent side, your book's already independent. So contractually, nothing is holding you back from moving those client relationships with you in your final move. Now, I don't say that to make all the firms mad. I don't go very far in this industry by making enemies, so let me be clear to the tuck-ins that are out there. I'm not sitting here and telling everyone to take advantage of you, because the reality of it is, a good tuck-in is usually going to sort of automatically and by nature discourage advisors from leaving them in most scenarios, because I said before, going from an employee role to a tuck-in, you're almost doubling your income, but you're not really adding any work. That is totally the opposite of true when you're leaving a tuck-in to go independent. Now you are at least doubling your workload, maybe not in terms of hours that you're going to be spending at the office. I'm not saying you're going to go from 40 to 80 hours, but you're definitely doubling or tripling the number of responsibilities you're going to have. Because when you go totally independent, buck stops with you, right? If the internet goes out, you've got to make the call. If the toilet stops working, you have to make the call or you have to fix it. If you have any problems around the office, any problems with any technology or any problems with clients, anything that may come up that you haven't thought of, that falls on you. And that's going to require a lot of your attention, even when you're on vacation. When I own my own firm, I don't know that I was ever on vacation. Even when I was on vacation, I wasn't really on vacation. So you're taking on all this added responsibility. And if you were leaving a nice tuck-in where you were happy at 75% and going up to 90%, you're only getting an extra 20% to double or triple your responsibility and really just your anxiety. So a solid tuck-in firm knows this. And a tuck-in also has the advantage to advisors of being, hey, they really want your business and they have to treat you pretty well to keep it. An employer relationship, they're a little bit less incentivized to try to keep you happy because they have you under contract, right? By default, you have to stay, or if you do leave, they get to keep the clients. Now, we all know that when those transitions take place, sure, clients are going to move over, and that's just part of the business. But they also have 60% profit margins to kind of absorb some of that hit when that happens. So they get to kind of call the shots with you when you're on the employee side. On the other extreme, with the truly independent broker-dealers, even those that are getting, you know, 5 or 10% override on your revenue, their business is a volume business, right? So they are making a dime on a lot of dollars rather than two quarters on a few dollars. So you have to be a pretty big fish to put a dent in their bottom line if you choose to leave and go elsewhere. So the service is not going to be quite as high there either. The tuck-in model kind of fits in this little middle ground there where they have enough economic interest to try to keep you happy. They can't afford to lose you either. So when you do make that jump, and I know advisors who might make that jump, if they are going to join a tuck-in firm, they're never going to admit openly that they're using it as a stepping stone, or at least I haven't seen it yet. But there's definitely, you know, in the back of their mind, they do know, okay, if this doesn't work out, I now have my freedom and I can now jump to the next level. But the tuck-in firms know that as well, so they are a little bit more aligned to try to keep their advisors happy and to make sure that they're providing a good environment with all the tools that you need. And if you're in a situation where you're a big producer and there's a tool that you need that you don't currently have, you can go to management, go to the leadership of the firm, and you have a little bit more bargaining power with you there to get what you need. So it's just a very friendly culture. And in a lot of cases, again, I just keep using that term sweet spot, but it really is kind of a best of all worlds for a lot of advisors in a lot of situations. And if you are making that transition from an employee relationship up to an independent, the tuck-ins have a little bit more of a financial vested interest, I guess. They're making enough money off of you that they can afford to provide some support during that transition. No, you're not going to get a year's worth of revenue up front as a big signing bonus in most cases, but they are going to be able to provide some level of support, whether that be paying the bills while you're transitioning your assets over, or maybe being a little bit of a financial backstop for legal costs should you get into them. No, they're not going to be able to go toe-to-toe in a big war with the big Wall Street guys. So play nicely and don't try to pick big legal fights. They're not going to be able to afford to get you out of that kind of a jam. But they can pay a couple grand to handle a cease and desist order. They can do some things to try to help ease that transition a little bit. And also, because they're in the deal with you, they're going to give you good advice and have a vested interest in supporting you through that and making sure that you're getting good advice and not picking fights that you can't win and they can't afford. So they really are a great way to smooth that transition a little bit more, where if you're making that jump all the way from big wirehouse to I'm going to do my own thing, if things are, you know, if you get into a pickle or you get into a problem with legal or whatnot, hey, it's on you, because even the independent broker dealers, they just don't have enough vested financial interest in the transaction to be able to really give you a whole lot of financial support, either to bridge the income gap or to support you on the legal side if things get a little bit squirrely on that side. Now, to try to earn back some of the goodwill with the firms that I may have lost there with that last little segment, I will say this as well. A lot of tuck-ins can attract downstream and upstream. So yes, they can pull the advisors upstream who are going from the employee model up to the tuck-in, but what I just said is still true for the bigger, large independent firms as well. Some of these guys that are totally independent, either have their own RIA or they're a part of a larger network, they're looking at this and saying, okay, well, I can offload all of these other responsibilities that I don't want and only take a 20% cut in my income. That can serve a couple of different purposes for the advisor. If they're, you know, call them 60 years old and they're getting to a point where they can see the finish line, but they're not ready to ride off into the sunset just yet, that can be sort of a transition into a semi-retirement. Or it could also just free up the bandwidth that they need for one more capital raise to really go all in and maximize the value of that practice so that they can sell it in 5 to 10 years. So tuck-ins can be this, again, this middle ground that can pull up from the employee side or maybe even acquire or at least recruit into them some of the larger practices as a way to kind of set them up for their it's sort of like the setup man in baseball, right? They're not the closing act, but they do set up the closer. I think a tuck-in can play that role as well. And then if that relationship's going well, it's a very seamless transition for the tuck-in to be able to just acquire the assets from that advisor who joined them maybe 5 years ago and make it a very seamless transition for the client. So it really is a good stepping stone for a lot of different transitions. I think that's really where the tuck-in kind of fits, is it's at the intersection of it's at the crossroads of a lot of different types of transactions that can take place, and they're well-positioned to at least be in the mix and in the conversation in a lot of different situations. And to advisors out there, when you're making this decision, a last note to advisors that are maybe out there shopping around, this could apply in a lot of different scenarios, whether you're looking for employee relationships, whether you're looking for independent tuck-ins, whether you're going independent. I will say, and I think a lot of us know this, it's pretty inherent, but go with the good guys, okay? Like, I know it's about the numbers, and I know the math really does matter, and I'm not telling you to take a 60% payout with a bunch of good guys instead of a 90% payout with jerks. But there's parts of the industry are commoditized enough at this point that if you're looking for an independent tuck-in at 75%, one's out there that is the right fit for you, that does have a good culture of good folks in the industry. Don't chase the 78% payout versus the 75% payout if the higher payout is going to be working with somebody that you're not a big fan of or don't get along very well with. At the end of the day, the deal that you get can be wrecked really quickly if you're not working with the right folks. And I don't say that with any partiality towards anybody whatsoever, right? I mean, I'm in transparency about my business with Advisor Advocates. I'm paid a percentage of revenue for advisors who come to me and say, find me a firm. I take those to the firm. The firm pays me usually 5% of the revenue or 5 basis points on the assets that the advisor brings with them. So I say that to say, I don't care who you go with. 5% is 5%. I don't care who writes the check. But as my pearl of wisdom, for what it's worth, take it with a grain of salt, the relationship is going to matter much more, especially in the tuck-in model, but really for all of them. But you really are, when you go to a tuck-in, it's about that team environment and about being a part of a rising tide that's lifting all boats. Because if you're a part of a team where you are the equity guy or you specialize in taxes or you specialize in insurance or you specialize in mutual funds or whatever the case may be, and you're a part of a team that can fuel each other and build off of each other's strengths, it really is going to help you get much further working together in the right environment than you would be able to go on your own in your own practice or even trying to assemble your own team. So it really is creating, you know, a 2+2=5 type scenario in that regard. At the same time, if you end up in the wrong situation with the wrong group of folks that are constantly fighting with each other and creating competition and creating ego wars and whatnot, now you've got a 2+2=3 scenario, which nobody's winning. So I would say in your vetting process, yes, the payouts and the financials, that's all a staple that everybody's going to care about. I would say being in the right cultural environment is huge, and making sure that you're a part of the right team. You're going to be a product of the system probably more than just the payout alone and what that says. And then the second factor that's really going to trump that is going to be just your business needs. What do your clients expect? What are the services that you have now that you can't afford to lose, or the things that you're not able to offer right now that you want to make sure you are able to add on as a part of this transition? Most of your independent tuck-ins, again, either they are themselves independent RIAs or they're plugged into an independent broker-dealer network. So they're going to have access to the vast majority of financial products and services and technologies and you name it, they can have access to it. However, not all of them are going to offer every single thing. You may want Orion, they may have Black Diamond. You may be used to Money Guide Pro, and they may use eMoney. So you will want to take inventory of, okay, what are the things that I want to have, and which ones do they have, and the ones that they don't, can I live without them? That's going to be at least as big of a factor as the financials are going to be in terms of getting your business to where you want to be. Because remember, you're now retaining a higher percentage of your revenue. So it becomes much more about growing your overall revenue pie than it getting an extra 2 percentage points of whatever that pie is. So that does it for today. I appreciate you taking the time to learn a little bit more about independent tuck-ins. On the next show, we will chat a little bit about your options if you are going totally independent, either as an RIA or joining an independent broker-dealer network. Now, before we go, if you are an advisor who is considering changing firms or selling your practice or just want to see what's out there, or you have questions about anything that I've talked about or any questions on anything else you've seen on the website, happy to chat anytime. I'm a pretty laid-back dude. I'm not going to harass you and try to force you to make a big decision that you don't want to make. I've been in enough of these situations and scenarios to know that it's a huge decision and it's not one that you're going to take very lightly, and there's nothing that I'm going to be able to say that's going to change that. So I'm not here to push you into any direction that you don't want to go, but am definitely happy to answer any questions that you have. Feel free to give me a call or shoot me a text. I would encourage you to shoot me a text, 919-561-2436. That's in the description below. At least text me ahead of time. Give me a heads up, because I'm not going to answer a phone call if I don't recognize the number the first time. So shoot me a text, send me an email, or feel free to schedule time on my calendar. There are links all over theadvisoradvocates.com. There are form messages. I mean, I've put everything out there that I can think of for ways for you to get in touch with me if you need me. So if I can help, I would love to chat. So hope to talk to you soon. Thanks for watching.